Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The Department of Homeland Security is reportedly investigating Wisconsin's elections. And some Republican candidates dine at the White House with President Donald Trump. Plus, Wisconsin trucking schools are shut down as part of the federal immigration crackdown. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 4th. I'm Ani Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. We have quite a federally focused, White House focused kind of show today. We'll start actually at the White House, where President Donald Trump hosted a dinner for a number of Republican lawmakers, including several from Wisconsin who were in attendance, Brian Stile, Tom Tiffany, and Derek Van Orden. Notably, they are all running for election. And in the video we are about to watch, he kind of called out a number of these candidates that are in particularly competitive areas. He gave a shout out to Tom Tiffany for winning a competitive primary, which he did not, and then he kind of pledged to be with all of them through November. So let's take a look at that.
And I want to thank you for all the hard work during this very important season, and I will be with you 100% all the way to November. I'm going to take the final 30 days, maybe a little bit more than that, because it's all about 35 races. You know, some of you guys are leading by so much, please don't make me go to your area. If you're leading by 40 points and you've been there for 25 years, like the speaker, he leads by 42 points and he has it made, please don't ask me to come to your area and make a speech, right? But I'm going to go to every one of those 35 places and we're going to see if we can get everyone elected.
So obviously Democrats kind of making a lot of hay of this appearance. I got numerous emails from various Democratic groups essentially saying, like, look at these Republicans, you know, cozying up to this unpopular president right now. David Crowley made a statement saying, you know, while Tiffany was dining in the Rose Garden, I'm hearing from the folks that Tiffany has sold out. So again, kind of trying to leverage this. What did you make of this? And what do these candidates sort of want or need from Trump this year? What do they maybe don't need?
They want his money. They don't need his baggage. There's a kind of interesting question here about, is it different for a state candidate versus a federal one? So Van Orden and Stile both running for election to the House. Stile, that race really isn't popping so far. Van Orden, one of the true toss-up races in the country. Van Orden is in a Trumpy district. He ran behind Donald Trump 2 years ago and 4 years ago. He needs Trump to fire up Trump's base. Trump's base only shows up when Trump's on the ballot, though. So how does he do that? Well, Donald Trump is talking about running ads this fall from his PAC that feature Donald Trump and talk about Donald Trump and what Donald Trump has done. That might help with that base, but it doesn't help with swing voters. So I've had Republicans tell me, but they're not sure he's the best messenger to try and remind people of, they like no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. They like these certain things because they're also remembering, I'm paying $4 for gas. Oh, diesel hit $5.85 a gallon, a record high this week. Those are bad things. So maybe it's different for federal officials or candidates. With Tiffany, it's an interesting, will Trump come campaign with Tom Tiffany? Now, Tom asked about this before and said, the president's busy, you know, he's got other stuff to do. I don't get the impression that Tiffany wants him in suburban Milwaukee. Maybe a rally in Wausau would be good. Maybe somewhere in western Wisconsin or north of Eau Claire, maybe that would be good. But yeah, Donald Trump coming to like Dane County would not be great for Tom Tiffany, but Tom Tiffany needs Trump to improve his numbers. Marquette poll last week, record low again, 40% job approval. I've been talking to people about this. In 2018, the last Marquette poll before the election, Trump was at 4750 for his job approval rating, late October of 2018. And Scott Walker lost by a point to Tony Evers. So if Trump can get back to that kind of territory, then Tiffany's chances go up. At 40%, not so great if voters are making the connection of Trump-Tiffany. If voters are saying, hey, I'm done with Trump, but I don't connect him and Tiffany because Tiffany's running for governor, not for president, maybe. But Democrats would love to have Donald Trump here as much as possible from now until November because they see him as a giant drag and everything because of the economy, gas and just Trump's general unpopularity.
Yeah, and we're seeing, you know, these kind of small efforts from Tom Tiffany to kind of put some distance in between them. So we talked about, you know, the difference on importing beef last time. Now it's about the whole Lake America situation where Tom Tiffany essentially said he doesn't agree with the renaming of Lake Ontario, although he also kind of made a joke about it. He said, but I would support changing Lake Michigan to Lake Wisconsin. And so, you know, some attempts to not necessarily be completely lined up. And so Democrats really have to make sure that they are hammering that connection, I think. Speaking of kind of ways that Republicans are gearing up for November, there is a midterm convention next week. You've been reporting on this quite a bit, which is how I learned that this is like even a thing that exists in the world. It is the first one in four decades. I think the last one was an attempt by Democrats, and then they canceled it at the last minute. So let's just start with the basics. What is this?
Okay.
Why is it happening?
There's a midterm convention in Dallas next week. I believe it's Wednesday and Thursday. They are going to basically rally the troops to try and get everybody engaged about the fall. Interestingly, the states are sending delegations. I asked the Republican Party of Wisconsin, like, what do you guys got? They're sending 17 delegates and 16 alternates to the convention. They won't tell me who. Thought that was kind of odd. I know Brian Shimmy, state chair, is going to the convention. We've been calling members of Congress to ask if they're going. So far, I know that Derek Van Orden's going to be there. Brian Stile is going to be there. Michael Alfonso is going to be there, candidate of the 7th Congressional District, and Glenn Grothman. I don't know about Scott Fitzgerald for sure. Tony Weed is not going to be there. Ron Johnson is not going to be there. National stories have talked about how the NRC or House Republicans are charging members $25,000 to come. That may be one reason why you don't go to the convention. This is supposed to be a way to, again, rally the base, and this is really going to focus Trump heavily. You might notice a theme for the president's thinking about November. Make it about me, and that'll make it all work out. Maybe. You know, maybe that helps. Maybe it boosts his job approval numbers a little bit. People remember what they like about him. But it's kind of an off message in a time when the party in front of the White House almost always struggles, especially when you're at where he is with his job approval. So I'm not quite sure that's going to be a great benefit. The bigger question is it negative for anybody to go or to have the president be part of your kind of campaign?
Yeah, you know, a year ago at the state Republican convention, Ron Johnson kind of gave this speech that was like, what do we do in elections where Trump is not at the top of the ticket? So at the time, that was kind of a liability. And now it is looking like mm-hmm. having him, you know, sort of implied at the top of the ticket could be sort of a problem for Republicans. Politico put out a story. The headline was, Republicans aren't exactly flocking to Trump's midterm convention. And they pointed out, they surveyed a number of Republicans who are not going. And some of them said, you know, family weddings, like other conflicts. Some of them said the high price of admission. And then some of them who are in swing districts or kind of tough races in other battleground states are trying to kind of steer clear of what's being called a Trump-a-palooza by some of them. And so you can see like that kind of calculation taking place as they gear up for these competitive midterms. So that'll be fun to watch from a distance. This week also, WEC met and once again kind of talked about the issue with Milwaukee's ballots in the primary, kind of looking ahead towards November. Will there be another issue with Milwaukee's voting system? This is, of course, in the context of there has been an ongoing push in the legislature to try to get absentee ballots counted or processed earlier than Election Day to try to stop some of these kind of like late night issues. So let's take a look at some video. Bob Spindell and Mark Thompson, Republican and Democrat, kind of going after Milwaukee.
So here, what appears to be one of the closest races, certainly in the history of Wisconsin, about 3,200 votes, possible problems could have made a difference. But I understand that this is the first time for the deputy director closing down these machines. Not quite sure why this duty was delegated to someone for the first time without close supervision, or rather have the executive director complete this process. The question is, was this a mistake? Was it done on purpose? Or was this done to delay the reporting? Going into the election that's coming up in November of 2026, and I know I'm not supposed to make bets on voting, but I'd bet anybody $100 that there'll be a problem, major problem, with November 26th election at Central Count.
They counted every vote. It's not like, you know, Madison, where we're looking at almost 200 people disenfranchised. nobody sent out duplicate ballots. If it wasn't for this ongoing, I think, unfair attack on the city and county of Milwaukee, nobody would have even paid attention to an hour delay. But it was compounded because the legislature hasn't allowed the bill to get passed to let Milwaukee County and Milwaukee start looking at absentee ballots early.
Okay, so again, Milwaukee kind of always being an issue in a way that gives rise, or at least maybe gives some credibility to these concerns about voting fraud. Again, these are human errors. As Mark Thompson said, all the votes were counted, but it kind of does give some ammunition, again, as we are going into an election where, among other things, President Trump has been trying to kind of sow doubts mm-hmm. about election integrity for years now.
Yeah, so the Elections Commission was going to basically teed up a letter to send to Milwaukee saying, we want to see this, this, and this. And so as the commission came to meet on Monday, Milwaukee sent a letter saying, hey, here's all this stuff. This is what happened. This is how we're going to fix it. We're going to have this happen in November. All good. Yeah, we made a mistake, but this is how we're going to take care of it. And so the commission held off on sending that letter saying, okay, they're going to share this stuff. We can wait a little bit. Milwaukee is supposed to post some more details today about what happened, so you can watch for that. The bottom line is, though, look, early processing, which doesn't allow you to count the ballots, but allows you to start opening the ballots and getting them ready, might have maybe helped speed up some things. But this was a clear snafu of, like, the staff downloading the wrong thing. And the screen tells you these are the audit logs, not the results. Like, how do you not see that? So, look, people are up for hours on end. You have to get in super early to come in to, like, process these ballots. And so, yeah, fatigue plays a role in it. Maybe they're down people. But Milwaukee has got to get its act together from November, not just for me and you to be in bed before 5 a.m., but because the longer it goes in Milwaukee, the more it's like, oh, there's something amiss. And Trump's vote dump claim for years is only because Milwaukee adds all these absentee ballots at one time. So when you put all in the system one time, what happens? Well, Milwaukee's pretty Democratic. People who use mail-in voting are mostly Democratic. So it's a big blue wave at like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. That's what drives that. And so the faster you get it done, faster you get it processed and uploaded properly, the fewer complaints you will have in November about the election in Wisconsin.
You sort of don't add oxygen to those rumors. However, that is a perfect segue into the fact that CNN had a scoop this week that DHS is, and I should say DHS, not DOJ, but mm-hmm. Homeland Security is investigating a number of states, including Wisconsin, for their elections. And so this is an investigative arm that normally goes after, like, drug smuggling, human trafficking, and they are going after election administrators, essentially. They have launched a coordinated criminal voter fraud surge initiative to pursue investigative leads, conduct field interviews, and support timely prosecutorial review. The states are up on the screen there. People can see it is a mix of blue states and swing states, mm-hmm. and Missouri. And I don't entirely know where that's coming from. But interestingly, DOJ has put out guidance for years saying don't investigate elections while an election is going on that will chill voting. You know, it can cause all kinds of issues. DHS has no such guidance. What do you make of this?
The backdrop of all this is what's been going on for about a year or so. So remember, the Department of Justice first asked Wisconsin for unredacted information on the voters a year ago. And they wanted to take all that information, run it against other records, to find out, is anybody here without documentation on this list? This is geared toward the same kind of thing, finding people who shouldn't be on the list who are on the voter list. The challenge is, well, one, in Wisconsin, you're supposed to say, are you a citizen? Now, there's not really a hammer to make sure you are. You basically say, yes, I'm a citizen, right? You have your ID, which you have to be resident to have an ID, so there's that piece to it. But feds, the Trump administration, wants to find these things and try and claim that's thrown elections. There was a U.S. Census Bureau report last month that claimed 24,000 people who are not here legally were on the voter rolls or cast ballots. They had 500 was their number for Wisconsin. I'm not sure they got 500. They took information against other third-party vendor information. People here say that's not accurate. We don't know where they got that number from. But it's all part of this kind of cauldron of Donald Trump believes he won the 2020 election. in some fashion. I'm not sure if he really believes that or like just wants to say he won. He is trying to find anything he can to convince others he did win, which there are plenty of people who believe he won. They've bought into what he's saying. So this is part of that, like, trying to portray it as there's something amiss. The only reason why I lost is because I got robbed of the election. And then to tee up a potential platform of if 26 goes awry for Republicans, oh, it must have been this. Their voter rolls weren't clean. There are questions about Milwaukee. So it just tees up more claims. And then there are fears among Democrats of, oh, will there be ICE agents at precincts, you know, come election day? What is going to, will the National Guard be called out? And then there's the kind of furthest fringy fear of, will Trump cancel the election? I'm not sure that it's possible, but still, I mean, people have all these fears of, like, if he's saying all these things, what's going to happen? Oh, by the way, we have this U.S. Postal Service thing, which there's a new injunction blocking it. The Trump folks have gone to the U.S. Supreme Court again saying, let this go through. During the Elections Commission meeting, they approved guidance for clerks saying, this can't be in place by Election Day. Don't pay attention to it. You don't have to worry about it because the system where you have to scan all these. So basically, you'd have to redesign your entire envelope. So when you get an absentee ballot in the mail, there's a wraparound envelope, the big one, and then you have the one that you sent it back in and the ballot. You have to scan everything. You have to redesign the envelope. How is that going to happen between now and Election Day? Oh, you have to have a system to track these ballots. How is that going to happen now, Election Day? All kinds of problems, but there's this whistleblower report recently that saying they're still going ahead with it. Even the court saying stop, they're still trying to get these systems to go. So that U.S. Supreme Court case, what are they going to do? And if they say yes, you can do it. Because remember, the last one was just the states lacked standing to sue because there are no harms yet. Well, now we're saying there's a harm because we have to do these things. The judge put on hold. Will the Supreme Court say, yeah, there's a harm now. You're right. We're not going to do this. Or will they clear the way for this? And then what happens? I would probably say people tell you at home, if you're voting by mail, it takes all out of the equation. Take your ballot back to the clerk in person. That takes us off the table. But if you are voting by mail and the rules change, just know what's going on with your ballot who now in November.
You know, and it's not a coincidence that kind of the thing that DHS is going after in this case is non-citizen voting. And that's, again, another kind of thing that we've watched unroll over the last couple of years as sort of an argument about around where things could go wrong in elections. So we've seen here in Wisconsin a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban non-citizen voting when, of course, it is already illegal according to state and federal law. And as you say, there's kind of these numbers that will be put forward that no one can actually kind of verify. So recently, Secretary Mark McMullen said they had found 250,000 non-citizens on the voter rolls in just four states. And then the New York Times and NPR filed requests, and they got a list of 180 social security numbers or ID numbers of some kind that they couldn't actually like match to people. So there's no actual kind of, again, evidence that this is going on. But as you say, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, maybe you are a citizen who's going to vote. But, you know, if you're concerned about family members or your community or whatever, like, we don't exactly know just kind of how this is going to play out. And it really does fit in with this sort of overall, again, Trump crackdown on immigration. Related to that was I've never done a story on commercial driver's licenses before, but I got to do one this week because, again, kind of related to this topic, the Department of Transportation is going after commercial driver's licenses and trucking schools that they say are kind of enforcing or not enforcing English proficiency. So it's all kind of in the same family. So let's take a look at Sean Duffy announcing this crackdown on trucking schools.
Today, what we are announcing is an emergency executive shutdown of 110 driving schools. So these are driving schools that account for 5,000 of the violations for English proficiency. What I mean by that is you have to speak English to operate a commercial motor vehicle. I didn't create that rule. President Trump didn't create that rule. That rule has been in place for decades. In one state, there's 10 skills testers. Again, they work for the state. If they get through the skills test, they're going to get a license. We have 10 skill testers who have given over 2,000 driver's licenses to people who can't speak English. This is the simplest of tests. If you talk to anybody, if you give a written test, which these testers have to do, you know if they speak and read English. And over 2,000 could not speak or read English, and they still were able to get a state license. So we are cracking down on this fraud, and we are going to bring safety back to American roadways.
So this is part of this kind of ongoing crackdown on the trucking industry, on commercial driver's license kind of in general. So in March, federal rules were tightened, essentially saying, like, before you could be a non-domiciled driver on any number of visas or kind of work authorizations. Now it's a much more restricted number of work authorizations. And the kind of argument has been that there have been these high-profile incidents of either fatal crashes or just horrible crashes involving immigrant drivers. And so part of the argument that they've been making is that they want to crack down on basically making it safer. I spoke with a lobbyist for the trucking industry here in Wisconsin who said, you know, English proficiency is a matter of safety. You need to be able to read signs. You need to be able to communicate with law enforcement or inspectors. But, you know, opponents of this say that this is kind of unfairly going after one particular group of drivers. Sean Duffy has also been kind of threatening to withhold funding from states that don't crack down on these licenses. And so one thing I'm paying attention to is a lawsuit that's going on in California where a significant number of drivers in the trucking industry there are of South Asian descent. And so a Sikh coalition and an Asian sort of civil rights group have filed a lawsuit saying this is essentially just targeting their community who are law abiding. It's smearing them. And so watching that going into federal court and kind of seeing how this plays out. But in the meantime, I mean, this is kind of an interesting avenue, again, to be going after, sort of conducting a form of immigration enforcement is going after these types of trucking schools. So something to look out for. And of course, you can never escape the Wisconsin connections with, you know, Sean Duffy being the one in charge of this. Also this week, the Wisconsin DOJ filed its 70th action against the Trump administration. So this is, again, another kind of multi-state lawsuit, and this is around a proposed ban on gender-affirming care through Medicaid and CHIPS. And the lawsuit essentially argues that it's a matter of states' rights to determine sort of how public insurance programs, what they're allowed to cover.
The rule was finalized last month. It's set to take effect in October. It doesn't ban the procedures. It bans using the federal money to pay for it. So, number 70 for Josh Call. I'll be interested to see in the AG's race how the challenges he's filed to the Trump administration play with him and Eric Toney. Eric, obviously a Republican, you would think he would not be as aggressive challenging the Trump administration as Josh Call has been.
Yeah, and, you know, they say that essentially, like, again, states should have authority over this unless something changes in statute. But, of course, the Hyde Amendment has been around for decades and tells states that they can't spend public dollars on abortion. So maybe this will be sort of another exception to that as well. And then finally, the Joint Finance Committee was briefly back in session this week to release PFAS funds. So this is part of that settlement that was agreed to in June with Tyco Fire Products. The lawsuit essentially said that the company did not notify residents of these communities about PFAS contamination tied to their fire training facility. Settlement was reached in June, and $10 million were released to the DNR that are supposed to go towards things like installation of deep wells, private well testing, and in-home treatment systems for these communities.
Well, the one real complaint is unanimous vote, but Eric Wimberger, who represents the area, said the proposal from DNR includes like up to $750,000 paid for a community liaison, who he said, in his words, basically helps you fill out paperwork. He wasn't very happy about that cost, but overall a good thing, he said.
And that takes us to the stock report. So rising this week is the Common School Fund.
So we mentioned this a few weeks ago. So a judge, we thought, overruled a budget provision. Turned out he signed the wrong document. Now he actually has overruled it. So this budget provision allowed Milwaukee County to keep all of its forfeitures from motor vehicle infractions. Everybody else does half. They keep half. Half goes to Common School Fund, which pays for libraries. In fact, I think it covers up to like 90% of costs for public school libraries in Wisconsin. Kind of interesting note. Anyway, Milwaukee County can use that money to pay for 12 assistant DA positions. The judge ruled that's unconstitutional, that the Wisconsin Constitution says you have to put money in the school fund. Everybody else is doing 50%. Milwaukee, you can't keep all of it. So two questions going forward, though. One, does Milwaukee have to pay back the money it got? So it's like $2.2 million a year to help pay for these DA positions. And two, what happens to the prosecutors? I've called the office a couple times, we haven't heard back yet, but that's kind of an interesting thing, like what happens to these prosecutors, because you could argue it's fewer people to prosecute crime in Milwaukee County, which has one of the highest rates in the state.
Mixed is Adam Mielen.
So Waukesha County exec Paul Farrell passed away in July, the special election in December to fill that office. We're now seeing the field kind of form. Chris Capping, a state senator, announced about a week after Farrell passed away he's going to run for the office. Now Nalen has filed the run. He told me he is exploring it, not going to talk about it just yet. It's an interesting dynamic of two Republican lawmakers running against each other. At one point, Scott Allen, a lawmaker from Waukesha, expressed some interest. He lost a race for mayor in the spring. Rob Hutton, state senator from Brookfield, kind of looked at it, but sure, that's not going to happen. Others might kick the tires, but if it's these two, on the one hand, Capping has a reputation in the Capitol of not being here very much. He prides himself in actually being here the fewest days of anybody in the Capitol. Being exec is a 24/7 job, so how will he perform in there, too? He's rubbed the wrong way in the lobbying corps because he's pretty much Dr. No when it comes to votes. And then two, the county executive is more of like a kind of glad handing, like everybody's got a friend kind of job. How will that translate into like how things have been done? Or maybe that would be attractive to have somebody for Waukesha County voters who's more of a hard charging conservative. But capping announcing so early rubbed people the wrong way. There's like an anybody but cap kind of movement. So Adam seems to be somebody that's kind of getting encouraged to run. The challenge, though, is how do you raise money for this? This race is going to be December 15th. If a primary is needed, it's like November 17th, something like that. There's a bigger election going on that month. So Cap has personal resources. He had about seven times more money cash on hand last time I checked in this state campaign account. So for Adam, you've got to raise money to kind of mount a successful campaign, build a coalition who will turn out, and do all of that while the main focus is on Tom Tiff and the race for governor, control the legislature. Like, where do you find those funds? It's going to be a challenge for anybody without personal resources to kind of run that race because it's in the middle of a bigger race.
That'll also be interesting because I think Adam has really kind of made a name for himself as being, you know, a younger lawmaker who's focused on things like technology. And so what will that kind of bring to that kind of race in a more conservative area? Following this week is Flock cameras, which has kind of emerged this week as the data centers du jour of political issues.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned data centers. Politicians were caught flat-footed by like the switch from Microsoft announces this like $3 billion project, was hailed as this huge job creator in like investment Wisconsin, to like a year later, people don't want them anywhere, right? My sense is that politicians looking at Flock cameras going, I'm not going to let that happen anymore. I was like caught flat-footed by data centers. I'm getting ahead of this. So in the last week, I've seen the Sheboygan mayor say, Flock has violated the contract of the city. We've turned them all off. We are going to vote to like end the contract. Calvert Johnson in Milwaukee says we're going to have new restrictions on these things. David Crowley running for governor is now the county executive in Milwaukee saying we need new policies. Other communities saying, hey, this is a problem. Like, we're tracked constantly. Just pull out your phone. There's a tracker in your phone. That's why you have Google Maps. It tells you like all it takes to get there, right? We are constantly being watched. But Flock cameras are a little bit different. And the critics will tell you it's because they don't just like know where you're doing. They store the information for 30 days. It's like a vehicle footprint, your license plate, the make of your car, the color, like all these, your movements. They can use AI to predict where you're going to be. Like that's getting people worried. And so while it's a useful, cruel tool for law enforcement, they're also then abusing it. We've had two Milwaukee cops who were charged with crimes because they were using it in authorized ways. Like one guy tracked his ex 50 times. Okay, not so cool. So now you're seeing all these people say, we have to do something about these. This week with Crowley coming out saying, hey, I want, you know, these new restrictions, Tom Tiffy jumped on that saying, oh, wait a second. He likes traffic cameras, so he's Big Brother David, essentially. If I'm elected, he told us on Tuesday that if he's elected, he would pause funding, state funding for local governments until they got a task force in place. He upped that with the Journal Sentinel to like, I would stop funding, share revenue for locals. We had like some kind of policy in place statewide about these things. So not sure that would work, but nonetheless, it shows you these politicians, like, I have figured a way to put myself on the right side of this issue. And it's a weird one too, because you have small C conservatives who don't like it, and you have liberals who don't trust government, this odd coalition that are on it. It's just kind of an odd issue, but it's one that's like exploding, and again, they'll be caught flat-footed like we were last time.
Yeah, and much like the data center thing, kind of not defined clearly in terms of partisan politics, kind of universally disliked at this point by a lot of voters, and so it'll be really interesting to see how that kind of plays out over the next couple of weeks. That'll do it for us on Rewind this week. I am Anya Van Wijkendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
See you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.